as if she forgot that I knew her. I backed away. Tell me everything, Amy. But first, was there ever a baby? The baby was a lie. It was the most desolate part for me. My wife as a murderer was frightening, repulsive, but the baby as a lie was almost impossible to bear. The baby was a lie. The fear of blood was a lie. During the past year, my wife had been mostly a lie. How did you set Desi up? I asked.
I found some twine in one corner of his basement. I used a steak knife to saw it into four pieces.
He let you keep a knife?
We were friends, you forget.
She was right. I was thinking of the story she'd told the police, that Desi had held her captive. I did forget. She was that good a storyteller.
Whenever Desi wasn't around, I'd tie the pieces as tight as I could around my wrists and ankles so they'd leave these grooves.
She showed me the lurid lines on her wrists, like bracelets.
I took a wine bottle, and I abused myself with it every day, so the inside of my vagina looked right. Right for a rape victim. Then today I let him have sex with me, so I had his semen, and I slipped some sleeping pills into his martini.
He let you keep sleeping pills? She sighed. I wasn't keeping up. Right, you were friends.
Then I...
She pantomimed, slicing his jugular. That easy, huh?
You just have to decide to do it, and then do it, she said. Discipline. Follow through. Like anything. You never understood that.
I could feel her mood turning stony. I wasn't appreciating her enough. Tell me more, I said. Tell me how you did it. An hour in, the water went cold, and Amy called an end to our discussion.
You have to admit, it's pretty brilliant, she said.
I stared at her.
I mean, you have to admire it just a little, she prompted.
How long did it take for Desi to bleed to death?
It's time for bed, she said. But we can talk more tomorrow if you want. Right now we should sleep.
Together. I think it's important. For closure. Actually, the opposite of closure.
Amy, I'm going to stay tonight because I don't want to deal with all the questions if I don't stay. But I'll sleep downstairs. She cocked her head to one side, studied me.
Nick, I can still do very bad things to you. Remember that.
Ha! Worse than what you've already done? She looked surprised.
Oh, definitely.
I doubt that, Amy. I began walking out the door.
Attempted murder, she said.
I paused.
That was my original plan early on. I'd be a poor, sick wife with repeated episodes, sudden intense bouts of illness, and then it turns out that all those cocktails her husband prepared her...
Like in the diary.
But I decided attempted murder wasn't good enough for you. It had to be bigger than that. Still, I couldn't get the poisoning idea out of my head. I liked the idea of you working up to the murder, trying the cowardly way first. So I went through with it.
You expect me to believe that?
All that vomit, so shocking. An innocent, frightened wife might have saved some of that vomit, just in case. You can't blame her, being a little paranoid.
She gave a satisfied smile.
Always have a backup plan to the backup plan.
You actually poisoned yourself.
Nick, please. You're shocked? I killed myself.
I need a drink, I said. I left before she could speak. I poured myself a scotch and sat on the living room couch. Beyond the curtains, the strobes of the cameras were lighting up the yard. Soon it would no longer be night. I'd come to find the morning depressing, to know it would come again and again. Tanner picked up on the first ring.
She killed him, I said. She killed Desi because he was basically... He was annoying her. He was power-playing her, and she realized she could kill him. And it was her way back to her old life, and she could blame everything on him. She murdered him, Tanner. She just told me this. She confessed.
I don't suppose you're able to record any of it somehow? Cell phone or something?
We were naked with the shower running, and she whispered everything.
I don't even want to ask, he said. You two are the most fucked up people I have ever met, and I specialize in fucked up people.
What's going on with the police?
He sighed.
She foolproofed everything. It's ludicrous, her story, but no more ludicrous than our story. Amy's basically exploiting the sociopath's most reliable maxim.
What's that?
The bigger the lie, the more they believe it.
Come on, Tanner. There's got to be something.
I paced over to the staircase to make sure Amy was nowhere nearby. We were whispering, but still, I had to be careful now.
For now, we need to toe the line, Nick. She left you looking fairly bad. Everything in the diary was true, she says. All the stuff in the woodshed was you. You bought the stuff with those credit cards, and you're too embarrassed to admit it. She's just a sheltered little rich girl. What would she know about acquiring secret credit cards in her husband's name? And my goodness, that pornography!
She told me there was never a baby. She faked it. With Noelle Hawthorne's pee.
Why didn't you say? That's huge. We'll lean on Noelle Hawthorne.
Noelle didn't know.
I heard a deep sigh on the other end. He didn't even bother asking how.
We'll keep thinking. We'll keep looking, he said. Something will break.
I can't stay in this house with that thing. She's threatening me with...
Attempted murder. The antifreeze. Yeah, I heard that was in the mix.
They can't arrest me on that, can they? She says she still has some vomit. Evidence. But can they really?
Let's not push it for now, okay, Nick? He said. For now, play nice. I hate to say it. I hate to... But that's my best legal advice for you right now. Play nice.
Play nice? That's your advice? My one-man legal dream team. Play nice? Fuck you!
I hung up in full fury. I'll kill her, I thought. I will fucking kill the bitch. I plunged into the dark daydream I'd indulged over the past few years when Amy had made me feel my smallest. I daydreamed of hitting her with a hammer, smashing her head in until she stopped talking, finally
stopped with the words she suctioned to me. Average, boring, mediocre, unsurprising, unsatisfying, unimpressive, basically. In my mind, I wailed on her with the hammer until she was like a broken toy, muttering, until she sputtered to a stop. And then it wasn't enough, so I restored her to perfection and began killing her again. I wrapped my fingers around her neck. She always did crave intimacy. And then I squeezed and squeezed her pulse. Nick? I turned around, and Amy was on the bottom stair in her nightgown, her head tilted to one side. Play nice, Nick.
Amy Elliott Dunn. The Night of the Return. He turns around, and when he sees me standing there, he looks scared. That's something useful, because I'm not going to let him go. He may think he was lying when he said all those nice things to lure me home, but I know different. I know Nick can't lie like that. I know that as he recited those words, he realized the truth. Ping! Because you can't be as in love as we were and not have it invade your bone marrow. Our kind of love can go into remission, but it's always waiting to return, like the world's sweetest cancer. You don't buy it? Then how about this? He did lie. He didn't mean a fucking thing he said. Well then, screw him. He did too good a job because I want him exactly like that. The man he was pretending to be. Women love that guy. I love that guy. That's the man I want for my husband. That's the man I signed up for. That's the man I deserve. So he can choose to truly love me the way he once did, or I will bring him to heel and make him be the man I married. I'm sick of dealing with his bullshit. Play nice, I say. He looks like a child, a furious child. He bunches his fists. No, Amy. I can ruin you, Nick. You already did, Amy. I see the rage flash over him, a shiver. Why in God's name do you even want to be with me? I'm boring, average, uninteresting, uninspiring. I'm not up to par. You spent the last few years telling me this. Only because you stopped trying, I say. You were so perfect with me. We were so perfect when we started, and then you stopped trying. Why would you do that?
I stopped loving you.
Why?
You stopped loving me. We're a sick, fucking, toxic Mobius strip, Amy. We weren't ourselves when we fell in love, and when we became ourselves, surprise, we were poison. We complete each other in the nastiest, ugliest possible way. You don't really love me, Amy. You don't even like me. Divorce me. Divorce me and let's try to be happy.
I won't divorce you, Nick. I won't. And I swear to you, if you try to leave, I will devote my life to making your life as awful as I can. And you know I can make it awful. He begins pacing like a caged bear.
Think about it, Amy, how bad we are for each other. The two most needful human beings in the world stuck with each other. I'll divorce you if you don't divorce me.
Really?
I will divorce you, but you should divorce me. Because I know what you're thinking already, Amy. You're thinking it won't make a good story. Amazing Amy finally kills her crazed rapist captor and returns home to a boring old divorce. You're thinking it's not triumphant. It's not triumphant. But think of it this way. Your story is not some drippy, earnest survivor story. TV movie circa 1992. It's not. You are a tough, vibrant, independent woman, Amy. You killed your kidnapper, and then you kept on cleaning house. You got rid of your idiot cheat of a husband. Women would cheer you. You're not a scared little girl. You're a badass, take-no-prisoners woman. Think about it. You know I'm right. The era of forgiveness is over. It's passé. Think of all the women, the politicians' wives, the actresses, every woman in the public who's been cheated on. They don't stay with the cheat these days. It's not stand by your man anymore. It's divorce the fucker. I feel a rush of hate toward him, that he's still trying to wriggle out of our marriage, even though I've told him 3 times now that he can't. He still thinks he has power. And if I don't divorce you, you'll divorce me? I ask.
I don't want to be married to a woman like you. I want to be married to a normal person.
Piece of shit. I see. You want to revert to your lame, limp, loser self? You want to just walk away? No. You don't get to go be some boring-ass middle American with some boring-ass girl next door. You tried it already. Remember, baby? Even if you wanted to, you couldn't do that now. You'll be known as the philandering asshole who left his kidnapped, raped wife. You think any nice woman will touch you? You'll only get
psychos. Crazy, psycho bitches.
He's pointing at me, jabbing the air. Don't call me that.
Psycho bitch?
It'd be so easy for him to write me off that way. He'd love that, to be able to dismiss me so simply. Everything I do for a reason, Nick, I say. Everything I do takes planning and precision. And discipline.
You are a petty, selfish, manipulative, disciplined, psycho bitch.
You are a man, I say. You are an average, lazy, boring, cowardly, woman-fearing man. Without me, that's what you would have kept on being, ad nauseam. But I made you into something. You were the best man you've ever been with me, and you know it. The only time in your life you've ever liked yourself was pretending to be someone I might like. Without me, you're just your dad.
Don't say that, Amy.
He balls up his fists. You think he wasn't hurt by a woman, too? Just like you? I say it in my most patronizing voice, as if I'm talking to a puppy. You think he didn't believe he deserved better than he got, just like you? You really think your mom was his first choice? Why do you think he hated you all so much? He moves toward me.
Shut up, Amy.
Think, Nick. You know I'm right. Even if you found a nice, regular girl, you'd be thinking of me every day. Tell me you wouldn't.
I wouldn't.
How quickly did you forget little Abel Andy once you thought I loved you again? I say it in my poor baby voice. I even stick out my lower lip. One love note, sweetie? Did one love note do it? Two? Two notes with me swearing I loved you and I wanted you back and I thought you were just great after all? Was that it for you? You are witty. You are warm. You are brilliant. You're so pathetic.
You think you can ever be a normal man again? You'll find a nice girl, and you'll still think of me. And you'll be so completely dissatisfied, trapped in your boring, normal life with your regular wife and your two average kids. You'll think of me, and then you'll look at your wife, and you'll think, dumb bitch.
Shut up, Amy. I mean it.
Just like your dad. We're all bitches in the end, aren't we, Nick? Dumb bitch. Psycho bitch. He grabs me by the arm and shakes me hard. I'm the bitch who makes you better, Nick. He stops talking then. He is using all his energy to keep his hands at his side. His eyes are wet with tears. He is shaking. I'm the bitch who makes you a man. Then his hands are on my neck.
Nick Dunn. The night of the return. Her pulse was finally throbbing beneath my fingers, the way I'd imagined. I pressed tighter and brought her to the ground. She made wet clucking noises and scratched at my wrists. We were both kneeling in face-to-face prayer for 10 seconds. You fucking crazy bitch. A tear fell from my chin and hit the floor. You murdering, mind-fucking, evil, crazy bitch. Amy's bright blue eyes were staring into mine, unblinking. And then the strangest thought of all clattered drunkenly from the back of my brain to the front and blinded me. If I kill Amy, who will I be? I saw a bright white flash. I dropped my wife as if she were burning iron. She sat hard on the ground, gasped, coughed. When her breath came back, it was in jagged rasps, with a strange, almost erotic squeak at the end. Who will I be then? The question wasn't recriminatory. It wasn't like the answer was the pious, then you'll be a killer, Nick. You'll be as bad as Amy. You'll be what everyone thought you were. No. The question was frighteningly soulful and literal. Who would I be without Amy to react to? Because she was right. As a man, I had been my most impressive when I loved her, and I was my next best self when I hated her. I had known Amy only 7 years, but I couldn't go back to life without her. Because she was right. I couldn't return to an average life. I'd known it before she'd said a word. I'd already pictured myself with a regular woman, a sweet, normal girl next door, and I'd already pictured telling this regular woman the story of Amy, the lengths she had gone to punish me and to return to me. I already pictured this sweet and mediocre girl saying something uninteresting like, oh no, oh my God. And I already knew part of me would be looking at her and thinking, you've never murdered for me. You've never framed me. You wouldn't even know how to begin to do what Amy did. You could never possibly care that much. The indulged mama's boy in me wouldn't be able to find peace with this normal woman, and pretty soon she wouldn't just be normal. She'd be substandard. And then my father's voice, dumb bitch, would rise up and take it from there. Amy was exactly right. So maybe there was no good end for me. Amy was toxic, yet I couldn't imagine a world without her entirely. Who would I be
with Amy just gone. There were no options that interested me anymore. But she had to be brought to heel. Amy in prison, that was a good ending for her. Tucked away in a box where she couldn't inflict herself on me, but where I could visit her from time to time, or at least imagine her. A pulse, my pulse, left out there somewhere. It had to be me who put her there. It was my responsibility. Just as Amy took the credit for making me my best self, I had to take the blame for bringing the madness to bloom in Amy. There were a million men who would have loved, honored, and obeyed Amy and considered themselves lucky to do so. Confident, self-assured real men who wouldn't have forced her to pretend to be anything but her own perfect, rigid, demanding, brilliant, creative, fascinating, rapacious, megalomaniac self. Men capable of being uxorious. Men capable of keeping her sane. Amy's story could have gone a million other ways, but she met me, and bad things happened. So it was up to me to stop her. Not kill her, but stop her. Put her in one of her boxes.
Amy Elliott Dunn. 5 days after the return. I know for sure now that I need to be more careful about Nick. He's not as tame as he used to be. Something in him is electric. A switch has turned on. I like it, but I need to take precautions. I need one more spectacular precaution. It will take some time to put in place this precaution, but I've done it before, the planning. In the meantime, we can work on our rebuilding. Start with the facade. We will have a happy marriage if it kills him. You're going to have to try again to love me, I told him, the morning after he almost killed me. It happened to be Nick's 35th birthday, but he didn't mention it. My husband has had enough of my gifts. I forgive you for last night, I said. We were both under a lot of stress, but now you're going to have to try again.
I know.
Things will have to be different, I said.
I know, he said.
He doesn't really know, but he will. My parents have visited daily. Rand and Mary Beth and Nick lavish me with attention. Pillows. Everyone wants to offer me pillows. We are all laboring under a mass psychosis that my rape and miscarriage have left me forever achy and delicate. I have a permanent case of sparrow's bones. I must be held gently in the palm lest I break. So I prop my feet on the infamous ottoman, and I tread delicately over the kitchen floor where I bled. We must take good care of me. Yet I find it strangely tense to watch Nick with anyone but me. He seems on the edge of blurting all the time, as if his lungs are bursting with words about me, damning words. I need Nick, I realize. I actually need him to back my story, to stop his accusations and denials and admit that it was him, the credit cards, the goodies in the woodshed, the bump in insurance. Otherwise, I will carry that waft of uncertainty forever. I have only a few loose ends, and those loose ends are people. The police, the FBI, they are sifting through my story. Boney, I know, would love to arrest me. But they botched everything so badly before, they look like such fools, that they can't touch me unless they have proof. And they don't have proof. They have Nick, who swears he didn't do the things I swear he did, and that's not much. but it's more than I'd like. I've even prepared in case my Ozarks friends, Jeff and Greta, show up, nosing around for a claim or cash. I've already told the police. Desi didn't drive us straight to his home. He kept me blindfolded and gagged and drugged for several days. I think it was several days. In some room, maybe a motel room, maybe an apartment. I can't be sure. It's all such a blur. I was so frightened, you know, and the sleeping pills. If Jeff and Greta show their pointy, low-down faces and somehow convince the cops to send a tech team down to the hideaway, and one of my fingerprints or a hair is found, that simply solves part of the puzzle. The rest is them telling lies. So Nick is really the only issue, and soon I'll return him to my side. I was smart. I left no other evidence. The police may not entirely believe me, but they won't do anything. I know from the petulant tone in Bonnie's voice, she will live in permanent exasperation from now on, and the more annoyed she gets, the more people will dismiss her. She already has the righteous, eye-rolling cadence of a conspiracy crackpot. She might as well wrap her head in foil. Yes, the investigation is winding down. But for Amazing Amy, it's quite the opposite. My parents' publisher placed an abashed plea for another Amazing Amy book, and they acquiesced for a lovely fat sum. Once again, they are squatting on my psyche, earning money for themselves. They left Carthage this morning. They say it's important for Nick and me, the correct grammar, to have some time alone and heal. But I know the truth. They want to get to work. They tell me they are trying to find the right tone. A tone that says, our daughter was kidnapped and repeatedly raped by a monster she had to stab in the neck, but this is in no way a cash grab. I don't care about the rebuilding of their pathetic empire, because every day I get calls to tell my story. My story. Mine, mine, mine. I just need to pick the very best deal and start writing. I just need to get Nick on the same page so that we both agree how this story will end. Happily. I know Nick isn't in love with me yet, but he will be. I do have faith in that. Fake it until you make it. Isn't that an expression? For now, he acts like the old Nick, and I act like the old Amy, back when we were happy. When we didn't know each other as well as we do now. Yesterday, I stood on the back porch and watched the sun come up over the river, a strangely cool August morning, and when I turned around, Nick was studying me from the kitchen window, and he held up a mug of coffee with a question. You want a cup? I nodded, and soon he was standing beside me, the air smelling of grass, and we were drinking our coffee together and watching the water, and it felt normal and good. He won't sleep with me yet. He sleeps in the downstairs guest room, with the door locked. But one day I will wear him down, I will catch him off guard, and he will lose the energy for the nightly battle, and he will get in bed with me. In the middle of the night, I'll turn to face him and press myself against him. I'll hold myself to him like a climbing, coiling vine until I have invaded every part of him and made him mine.
Nick Dunn, 30 days after the return. Amy thinks she's in control. But she's very wrong, or she will be very wrong. Bonnie and Go and I are working together. The cops, the FBI, no one else is showing much interest anymore. But yesterday Bonnie called out of the blue. She didn't identify herself when I picked up, just started in like an old friend. Take you for a cup of coffee? I grabbed Go
and we met Boney back at the pancake house. She was already at the booth when we arrived, and she stood and smiled somewhat weakly. She'd been getting pummeled in the press. We did an awkward group-wide hug or handshake shuffle. Boney settled for a nod. First thing she said to me once we got our food, "I have one daughter, 13 years old, Mia, for Mia Hamm. She was born the day we won the World Cup. So, that's my daughter."
I raised my eyebrows. "How interesting. Tell me more."
"You asked that one day, and I didn't... I was rude. I'd been sure you were innocent, and then everything said you weren't. So I was pissed that I could be that fooled. So I didn't even want to say my daughter's name around you."
She poured us out coffee from the thermos.
"So it's Mia," she said.
"Well, thank you," I said.
"No, I mean... crap."
She exhaled upward, a hard gust that fluttered her bangs.
"I mean, I know Amy framed you. I know she murdered Desi Collings. I know it. I just can't prove it."
"What is everyone else doing while you're actually working the case?" Goh asked.
"There is no case. They're moving on. Gilpin is totally checked out. I basically got the word from on high. Shut this shit down. Shut it down. We look like giant, rube, redneck jackasses in the national media. I can't do anything unless I get something from you, Nick. You got anything?"
I shrugged. "I got everything you got. She confessed to me, but..."
"She confessed?" she said.
"Well, hell, Nick, we'll wire you."
"It won't work. It won't work. She thinks of everything. I mean, she knows police procedure cold. She studies, Rhonda."
She poured electric blue syrup over her waffles. I stuck the tines of my fork in my bulbous egg yolk and swirled it, smearing the sun.
"It drives me crazy when you call me Rhonda."
"She studies, Ms. Detective Boney." She blew her breath upward, fluttered her bangs again, took a bite of pancake.
"I couldn't get a wire anyway at this point."
"Come on, there has to be something, you guys," Goh snapped.
"Nick, why the hell are you staying in that house if you aren't getting something?"
"It takes time, Goh. I have to get her to trust me again. If she starts telling me things casually, when we're not both stark naked..." Boney rubbed her eyes and addressed Goh.
"Do I even want to ask?"
"They always have their talks naked in the shower with the water running," Goh said.
"Can't you bug the shower somewhere?"
"She whispers in my ear, on top of the shower running," I said.
"She does study," Boney said. "She really does. I went over that car she drove back, Desi's Jag. I had him check the trunk where she swore Desi had stowed her when he kidnapped her. I figured there'd be nothing there. We'd catch her in a lie. She rolled around in the trunk, Nick. Her scent was detected by our dogs. And we found 3 long blonde hairs. Long blonde hairs. Hers before she cut it. How she did that..."
"Foresight. I'm sure she had a bag of them, so if she needed to leave them somewhere to damn me, she could."
"Good God. Can you imagine having her for a mother? You could never fib. She'd be 3 steps ahead of you, always."
Bony, can you imagine having her for a wife?
She'll crack, she said. At some point, she'll crack.
She won't, I said. Can't I just testify against her?
You have no credibility, Boney said. Your only credibility comes from Amy. She single-handedly rehabilitated you, and she can single-handedly undo it. If she comes out with the antifreeze story...
I need to find the vomit, I said. If I got rid of the vomit and we exposed more of her lies...
We should go through the diary, Ghost said. 7 years of entries? There have to be discrepancies.
We asked Rand and Mary Beth to go through it, see if anything seemed off to them, Boney said. You can guess how that went. I thought Mary Beth was going to scratch my eyes out.
What about Jacqueline Collings or Tommy O'Hara or Hillary Handy? Ghost said. They all know the real Amy. There has to be something there.
Boney shook her head.
Believe me, it's not enough. They're all less credible than Amy. It's pure public opinion. But right now, that's what the department is looking at. Public opinion.
She was right. Jacqueline Collings had popped up on a few cable shows, insisting on her son's innocence. She always started off steady, but her mother's love worked against her. She soon came across as a grieving woman desperate to believe the best of her son, and the more the hosts pitied her, the more she snapped and snarled, and the more unsympathetic she became. She got written off quickly. Both Tommy O'Hara and Hillary Handy called me, furious that Amy remained unpunished, determined to tell their story, but no one wanted to hear from two unhinged former anythings. Hold tight, I told them. We're working on it. Hillary and Tommy and Jacqueline and Boney and Go and I, we'd have our moment. I told myself I believed it.
What if we at least got Andy? I asked. Got her to testify that everywhere Amy hid a clue was a place where we'd, you know, had sex. Andy's credible. People love her.
Andy had reverted to her old cheery self after Amy returned. I know that only from the occasional tabloid snapshots. From these, I know she has been dating a guy her age, a cute, shaggy kid with earbuds forever dangling from his neck. They look nice together, young and healthy. The press adored them. The best headline, Love Finds Andy Hardy, a 1938 Mickey Rooney movie pun only about 20 people would get. I sent her a text. I'm sorry. For everything. I didn't hear back. Good for her. I mean that sincerely.
Coincidence, Boney shrugged. I mean, weird coincidence, but it's not impressive enough to move forward. Not in this climate. You need to get your wife to tell you something useful, Nick. You're our only chance here.
Go slammed down her coffee.
I can't believe we're having this conversation, she said. Nick, I don't want you in that house anymore. You're not an undercover cop, you know. It's not your job. You are living with a murderer. Fucking leave. I'm sorry, but who gives a shit that she killed Desi? I don't want her to kill you. I mean, someday you burn her grilled cheese, and the next thing you know... My phone's ringing and you've taken an awful fall from the roof or some shit. Leave!
I can't. Not yet. She'll never really let me go. She likes the game too much.
Then stop playing it.
I can't.
I'm getting so much better at it. I will stay close to her until I can bring her down. I'm the only one left who can do it. Someday she'll slip and tell me something I can use. A week ago I moved into our bedroom. We don't have sex, we barely touch, but we are husband and wife in a marital bed, which appeases Amy for now. I stroke her hair. I take a strand between my finger and thumb, and I pull it to the end and tug, like I'm ringing a bell. And we both like that, which is a problem. We pretend to be in love, and we do the things we like to do when we're in love, and it feels almost like love sometimes, because we are so perfectly putting ourselves through the paces, reviving the muscle memory of early romance. When I forget, I can sometimes briefly forget who my wife is. I actually like hanging out with her, or the her she is pretending to be. The fact is, my wife is a murderess who is sometimes really fun. May I give one example? One night I flew in lobster like the old days, and she pretended to chase me with it, and I pretended to hide, and then we both, at the same time, made an Annie Hall joke, and it was so perfect. So the way it was supposed to be, that I had to leave the room for a second. My heart was beating in my ears. I had to repeat my mantra. Amy killed a man, and she will kill you if you are not very, very careful. My wife, the very fun, beautiful murderess, will do me harm if I displease her. I find myself jittery in my own house. I will be making a sandwich, standing in the kitchen midday, licking the peanut butter off the knife, and I will turn and find Amy in the same room with me, those quiet little cat feet, and I will quiver. Me, Nick Dunn, the man who used to forget so many details, is now the guy who replays conversations to make sure I didn't offend. To make sure I never hurt her feelings. I write down everything about her day, her likes and dislikes, in case she quizzes me. I am a great husband because I am very afraid she may kill me. We've never had a conversation about my paranoia because we're pretending to be in love, and I'm pretending not to be frightened of her. But she's made glancing mentions of it.
You know, Nick, you can sleep in bed with me, like, actually sleep. It will be okay. I promise. What happened with Desi was an isolated incident. Close your eyes and sleep.
But I know I'll never sleep again. I can't close my eyes when I'm next to her. It's like sleeping with a spider.
Amy Elliott Dunn, 8 weeks after the return. No one has arrested me. The police have stopped questioning. I feel safe. I will be even safer very soon. This is how good I feel. Yesterday, I came downstairs for breakfast, and the jar that held my vomit was sitting on the kitchen counter, empty. Nick, the scrounger, had gotten rid of that little bit of leverage. I blinked an eye, and then I tossed out the jar. It hardly matters now. Good things are happening. I have a book deal. I am officially in control of our story. It feels wonderfully symbolic. Isn't that what every marriage is anyway? Just a lengthy game of he said, she said? Well, she is saying, and the world will listen, and Nick will have to smile and agree. I will write him the way I want him to be, romantic and thoughtful and very, very repentant, about the credit cards and the purchases and the woodshed. If I can't get him to say it out loud, he'll say it in my book. Then he'll come on tour with me and smile and smile. I'm calling the book simply amazing. Causing great wonder or surprise. Astounding. That sums up my story, I think.
Nick Dunn. 9 weeks after the return. I found the vomit. She'd hidden it in the back of the freezer in a jar, inside a box of Brussels sprouts. The box was covered in icicles. It must have been sitting there for months. I know it was her own joke with herself. Nick won't eat his vegetables. Nick never cleans out the fridge. Nick won't think to look here. But Nick did. Nick knows how to clean out the refrigerator, it turns out, and Nick even knows how to defrost. I poured all that sick down the drain, and I left the jar on the counter so she'd know. She tossed it in the garbage. She never said a word about it. Something's wrong. I don't know what it is, but something's very wrong. My life has begun to feel like an epilogue. Tanner picked up a new case. A Nashville singer discovered his wife was cheating, and her body was found the next day in a Hardee's trash bin near their house, a hammer covered with his fingerprints beside her. Tanner is using me as a defense. I know it looks bad, but it also looked bad for Nick Dunn, and you know how that turned out. I could almost feel him winking at me through the camera lens. He sent the occasional text, "You okay?" or "Anything?" No, nothing. Boney and Go and I hung out in secret at the pancake house, where we sifted the dirty sand of Amy's story, trying to find something we could use. We scoured the diary, an elaborate anachronism hunt. It came down to desperate nitpickings like, she makes a comment here about Darfur. Was that on the radar in 2010? Yes, we found a 2006 news clip with George Clooney discussing it. Or my own best worst. Amy makes a joke in the July 2008 entry about killing a hobo, but I feel like dead hobo jokes weren't big until 2009. To which Boney replied, "Pass the syrup, freak show." People peeled away, went on with their lives. Boney stayed. Go stayed. Then something happened. My father finally died. At night, in his sleep. A woman spooned his last meal into his mouth. A woman settled him into bed for his last rest. A woman cleaned him up after he died. And a woman phoned to give me the news. "He was a good man," she said, dullness with an obligatory injection of empathy. "No, he wasn't," I said. And she laughed like she clearly hadn't in a month. I thought it would make me feel better to have the man vanished from the earth, but I actually felt a massive, frightening hollowness open up in my chest. I had spent my life comparing myself to my father, and now he was gone, and there was only Amy left to bat against. After the small, dusty, lonely service, I didn't leave with Go. I went home with Amy, and I clutched her to me. That's right. I went home with my wife. I have to get out of this house, I thought. I have to be done with Amy once and for all. Burn us down so I couldn't ever go back. Who would I be without you? I had to find out. I had to tell my own story. It was all so clear. The next morning, as Amy was in her study clicking away at the keys, telling the world her amazing story, I took my laptop downstairs and stared at the glowing white screen. I started on the opening page of my own book. I am a cheating, weak-spined, woman-fearing coward, and I am the hero of your story. Because the woman I cheated on, my wife, Amy Elliott Dunn, is a sociopath and a murderer. Yes, I'd read that.
Amy Elliott Dunn, 10 weeks after the return. Nick still pretends with me. We pretend together that we are happy and carefree and in love, but I hear him clicking away late at night on the computer, writing his side. I know it. I can tell by the feverish outpouring of words, the keys clicking and clacking like a million insects. I try to hack in when he's asleep, although he sleeps like me now, fussy and anxious, and I sleep like him. But he's learned his lesson, that he's no longer beloved Nicky, safe from wrong. He no longer uses his birthday, or his mom's birthday, or Bleeker's birthday as a password. I can't get in. Still, I hear him typing, rapidly and without pause, and I can picture him hunched over the keyboard, his shoulders up, his tongue clamped between his teeth. And I know that I was right to protect myself, to take my precaution. Because he isn't writing a love story.
Nick Dunn, 20 weeks after the return. I didn't move out. I wanted this all to be a surprise to my wife, who was never surprised. I wanted to give her the manuscript as I walked out the door to land a book deal. Let her feel that trickling horror of knowing the world is about to tilt and dump its shit all over you, and you can't do anything about it. No, she may never go to prison, and it will always be my word against hers, but my case was convincing. It had an emotional resonance, if not a legal one. So let everyone take sides. Team Nick, Team Amy. Turn it into even more of a game. Sell some fucking t-shirts. My legs were weak when I went to tell Amy. I was no longer part of her story. I showed her the manuscript, displayed the glaring title, Psycho Bitch, a little inside joke. We both like our inside jokes. I waited for her to scratch my cheeks, rip my clothes, bite me.
"Oh, what perfect timing," she said cheerfully, and gave me a big grin. "Can I show you something?"
I made her do it again in front of me. Piss on the stick, me squatting next to her on the bathroom floor, watching the urine come out of her and hitting the stick and turning it pregnant blue. Then I hustled her into the car and drove to the doctor's office, and I watched the blood come out of her, because she isn't really afraid of blood, and we waited the 2 hours for the test to come back. Amy was pregnant. "It's obviously not mine," I said.
"Oh, it is."
She smiled back. She tried to snuggle into my arms.
"Congratulations, Dad."
"Amy," I began, because of course it wasn't true. I hadn't touched my wife since her return. Then I saw it. The box of tissues, the vinyl recliner, the TV and porn, and my semen in a hospital freezer somewhere. I'd left that will destroy notice on the table, a limp guilt trip. And then the notice disappeared, because my wife had taken action, as always, and that action wasn't to get rid of the stuff, but to save it. Just in case. I felt a giant bubble of joy. I couldn't help it.
and then the joy was encased in a metallic terror.